Perek Beis Mishnah Zayin. The Mishnah says, Avhu ra gulgolus achas shesapa al pnei hamoyim. This is referring back to Hillel, which we're actually going to see the connection of Mishnah Zayin to the ending of Mishnah Vav, that Hillel noticed that there was a skull floating on the water. Amrullah, and he said something to it. And it's interesting that we're going to see that what he says is not even in Hebrew. He has to speak in Aramaic. He says, Al di'at v'atfuch, because you drowned others, they drowned you. V'sof metefayich yatufun, and those who drowned you will be drowned eventually. Now, exactly what Hillel was saying, who is he speaking to, why is it in Aramaic, we're going to get into all that. But before, I'd like to see the segue, the connection of this Mishnah to that of the previous Mishnah in Mishnah Vav. He said, in conclusion, "V'makom shein anashim hishtadel lios ish," and we translated that literally, that in a place where there are no leaders, strive to be a leader. That even if you think that you're not worthy to be a leader, you should still, in the event that there's no leaders, accept this position of being a leader. I'd like to share with you another explanation, which maybe will then be a good introduction into this upcoming Mishnah Zayin. Rabbi Azdaba once told me on Purim the following joke. He said there was a man that was riding his car, and there was a light, a red light, and he ran right through it. Unfortunately for him, a police officer saw this and pulled him over. He turned to the man and asked him, he said, "Why did you do that? Didn't you see that there was a light there?" And he said, "Yeah, I saw the light, but unfortunately, I didn't see you." And with that story, we can actually be reminded of the last words of the great sage Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai when he was on his deathbed. The Gemara tells us on Chaf Chesem and Beis and Mesechtes Brachos that his students turned to him and said, "Rebbe, please, Barchenu, give us an inspirational bracha. As we know, you will no longer be with us physically. Give us some inspirational words that we can carry with us for the rest of our lives so that we'll be good people." Amar lahem, so he turned to his students and said, "Yehi ratzon shetei mara shemayim aleichem kimar bas v'dam." That the fear that you have for Hashem should be on the same level as the fear that you have for mortal man, for a human being. So the students were shocked, and they said, "Ad kan? That's it? That's the level of your shemayim you want us to have? Just to fear God on the same level as a human being? You would think certainly we should fear Hashem much more." Yochanan ben Zakkai, in his last word, said, "Halvai, I wish that you would have that level of your shemayim." And he says, "I'll prove to you. When a person does an avera, what do they say? Shul yareini adam. I hope no one saw." But just like that police officer, there was someone that saw. HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem saw. And according to the words of the Rabbeinu Yonah, and also the way that the Medrash Shmuel interprets it, we can now have a different reading of the words, "Mamakam shein anashim hishtadil yos ish." The Rabbeinu Yonah says, what does it mean that in a place, in a makom shein anashim, hishtadel yos ish? Mefarshim harishonim zerchonu levracha, our rabbis of blessed memory, said, "B'makom shein anashim lo'orcha b'mitzvos," where there's no one around you to awaken you, to tell you that it's necessary for you to do mitzvos, and that you should be rebuked from the things that you shouldn't do. Hishtadel lios ish. You should be that person and make sure that you still stay on the right path. And the Medrash Shmuel, who actually quotes the Rabbeinu Yonah, says it a little bit. bit differently, but it's the same concept. He says, "B'mokim she'ne nashim lohochiach oscha." When there's no one to rebuke you and to say that you're doing something wrong, tochiach atot atzmocha, do it yourself. And therefore, a possible reading of this Mishnah, hishtadlios ish, means b'mokim she'ne nashim. Even at a time when there's no one looking, when there's no one around, hishtadlios ish, you should still in your mind envision as though there are people around and be a mensch. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, is looking. And Hashem will exact punishment upon you if you did something which was inappropriate, even though you ran that red light. But Hashem is looking at you, and therefore you will be held accountable. There are consequences to your actions. If you commit a crime, there will be a punishment for that crime. And with that, we can maybe now understand the words of our Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that Hillel noticed some skull floating. And once he saw that skull, he said, "I'm telling you that it must be the reason why you drowned is someone drowned you. And don't worry, that person 100% will also drown." It's brought down in the Likutei Sheish. He asks two questions. We'll get to the first one, but I think this addresses the whole concept of this Mishnah and the previous words of Mishnah Vav. He says as follows, V'hosev ha-medrash Shmuel lahakshos. The Medrash Shmuel asks a question. I'm the Mekushi Ashenis Hizu. What's the second question? Shein gozer omer l'golgolas al di atvadatvuch. That what did he say? That I guarantee you that the person that drowned you will be drowned. And more than that, the fact that you were drowned, you murdered someone, it must be that's the only reason why you were drowned. Says the Medrash Shmuel, Shehari kishenechshav mativ onitov atzov kol olam. You really think about it and go all the way back to the beginning of creation. Nimsa shaharishon shahusa bin nahar hulovitzav esachar klal. It doesn't make sense. Because what Hillel is saying is that 100%, if you are going to drown, if you were killed, you were murdered, it must be you murdered someone before you. But that rule cannot necessarily be a guaranteed rule. Because the very first human being that drowned, whoever that was, I should say the first human being that was drowned by another person who was murdered through water, that first person who died obviously didn't drown anyone with water. Because he was the first one. So what exactly is Hillel saying, this guarantee that because you drowned others, they drowned you? And it continues and says, for example, if you go all the way to the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, Parshas Bereishis, Bahari Hevel Neherag, Vahu Hargis Acher, Ad Kan Loshono. We know the story of Cain and Hevel. Cain killed his brother Hevel. Hevel didn't kill anyone. So why is Hillel all of a sudden saying that it's a guarantee that if you murdered someone, that's the reason why you were drowned? It's not necessarily the case. It's possible that you could have been murdered even though you didn't do anything wrong. Look at Cain and Hevel. And therefore, the way that the Medrash Shmuel explains this Mishnah is similar to the way he explained and borrowed the words of Rabbeinu Yonah in the previous Mishnah. Then he says that really what Hillel is telling us is not it's exactly this way, but rather the Efshe Sharatza Litain Azhara Litalmidov Shesh Din Vyesh Dayin. He wants people to understand that even though Hashem and you think Hashem's not around, no one is going to punish you because I got away with it. No one saw. The reality is there is always a dying, there's always a din. B'mokom she'ein anoshim. Even when there's no one around, realize that there's consequences to your actions. And therefore Hillel's not saying 100% that this person who drowned, must have drowned someone. No. But he's saying that in general, the concept is that there are consequences to your actions. That you shouldn't think that you can just get away with things because no one saw you committing a crime. The reality is Hashem saw you, and therefore you will eventually be punished. That's how he explains the second question. The Likud Sheish brings down the Medrash Shmuel earlier in his Sefer, and he says as follows. He says that we learn out from here the tremendous message of Hillel is Hashkacha Pratit, that Hashem is directly involved in our lives. And when we have something that happens to us, it is Mida Kenegan Mida. There is a complete quid pro quo for our actions. Because if we look at the words of Hillel, he doesn't say that since you murdered, you were murdered, but rather he gives an exact crime. He says, since you drowned someone. It wasn't just that you killed someone, explains the Medrash Shmuel, but you drowned them. And since you use water to drown them, therefore that's the precise way that you will also die, in the exact same way. And then he says, things don't just happen in this world. Unfortunately, some people think that we're just on this earth and things just happen to us, and the families that we have just happen to be our families, and our children just happen to be our kids, and the encounters that we have are just our encounters, and the communities that we live in just happen to be the communities. No. Nothing is by chance. Hashem has a master plan, and since you did something wrong, that's precisely how you will be punished. In fact, the Rambam says in his Sefer, Mor Nebuchim, he explains that Hashkachas Hashem Yisbarech Hu B'chol Prat U'Prat Shira B'chai Adam. Every small, minute detail of one's life, Hashem knows exactly what is going to happen. Of course, which could deal with the issue of Bechira, which we dealt with in previous weeks. The Efshar Shem Davar L'Ha'asot Imlo B'Hashkacha Pratit Me'is Hashem Yisbarech. The only reason why things happen is because Hashem knew that they were going to happen and they were supposed to happen. Things don't just happen by chance. So if a person, something good happens to them, something bad happens, it was all predetermined that those things should happen to you. And this is similar to the concept of Chazal, Hakol B'di Shemayim, Chos Me'ir Shemayim, that whether we want to be a tzaddik or a rasha, that's in our hands, that's our choice. But because we're wealthy, or we don't have hatzlacha, we're poor, or we're good looking, or maybe not so good looking, we're tall, we're short, all these things, it's already made up in our DNA, in our genetic system. It's how it is. And therefore we cannot take credit for any of those things. And in fact, the Gemara in Chulin tells us that even the movement of one's little finger on the bottom of this earth is already occurring only because Im kein machrizin olam milmalo, says the Gemara, only with the announcement and the decree above in the Shemayim. But with this, we dealt with question number two. The question number two was, it's not necessarily the case that this person drowned another person, because after all, look at Cain and Hevel. The Medrash Shmuel asked another question, and that is, Eich Omar, how could he say, v'sof, that at the end, ultimately, that since you were drowned, since those people who drowned you, those people ultimately drown. Kimasim b'chol yom, kame hargin asher enam nehargin rak mesim al mitasim misi b'dishmayim. All we need to do is look in the newspaper with rishayim, like in a machshemayim, such as Osama bin Laden. He's a murderer, a terrorist, and yet supposedly he's living larger than life. So how could Hillel say this? That since this person drowned you, oh, he'll drown. It's not so. We see that they die a peaceful death, mesimam mitasam, misibidi shemayim. So Hillel, how can you make such a statement when we open up our eyes and we say that that's not the case of this world? So we have a couple answers. One is the sensitive reading of this Mishnah, Mishnah Zion, that says v'sof, at the end, eventually. What does that mean, v'sof? So, getting a little bit Kabbalistic over here for a moment, he says as follows. The word sof is extra, and therefore, what does this mean? It means, av im tira ish mibnei Yisrael, matif shel yotav. We see that the person committed a crime, he drowned someone, he himself didn't drown, he wasn't murdered. In kol zet teidolcha, you should know, shim lo yotav ato rak meisal mitasov. Now, in this world, he died in a peaceful manner. Achar kach, maybe also Hashem Yisbarach besod ha-gilgul. Based on the concept of Gilgul Neshamot, rest assured that even in our world that we see with our own eyes, we think that this person is never going to be punished. The reality is, ultimately, he will be punished. Another explanation is brought down by the Tiferes Yoshua. The Tiferes Yoshua says, you're right, maybe the guy did die a misa al mitasam. He died on his bed. But it's possible, yochol adayin liyo shemes kodem zmana. How do we know, necessarily, that he died when he died at age 63 or 49, a peaceful death? Maybe he was supposed to live until he was 95. How are we supposed to know the sufferings of a person? How are we supposed to know the age of a person's lifespan? And therefore, beautifully, you can explain that it's true. He will be punished. He may not necessarily drown, but nonetheless, he will be punished. There will be consequences, ultimately, for his actions. It's interesting, according to the idea of Gilgal, that the language of the Mishnah, Hura Gulgoles, which is a skull, but it's also round, just like Gilgal Neshamos, as this person will ultimately get his own. Some people ask, how do we know definitively, 100%, that this person is going to be punished? How do we know 100%, Hillel that is, that this person drowned others? And how do we know that this person drowned through water? Maybe, like we see in all these detective movies, maybe he was murdered and they threw him into the river afterwards. How does he know all this happened? So the Chidah says that there's a striking resemblance between Hillel and Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, the Arizal explains that Hillel was the Gilgal Neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu. And if you analyze both of their lives, you see that they were very similar in nature. After all, Moshe Rabbeinu, he lived for 120 years, and Hillel also lived for 120 years. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu was a leader over the Jewish people for 40 years, so too Hillel was a leader. He was also a leader for the Jewish people for that amount of time. The Torah says that Moshe was an anav, a tremendous humble man. And of course, as we've seen in the stories previous weeks, Hillel also was as well. And just like Moshe Rabbeinu explains the Arizal, according to the words in the Chidah, that what did Moshe Rabbeinu see? In his lifetime, he knew a king, and the king's name was Paro. And Paro was a man that drowned, according to at least this opinion, not everyone agrees to this, but according to his opinion, Paro drowned in the sea. So, Av Hillel Bedor Hazeh Rog Gilgelis Achas Shehu Paro. Hillel looked at this skull, and the skull belonged to Paro. And he explains that this is why he said this to the skull. That since you drowned others, as the Pasuk says, Ko'aben hayor tashlichuhu, that any child that's born, a boy that is born in Egypt, cast him into the sea. So since you caused people to drown, atvuch, you were punished mida kenegin mida, that you were also drowned. And that's exactly how the Chidah explains how he knew definitively that this person, in fact, was drowned and drowned others. Others explain that Hillel, who lived by the time of the Roman Empire, that he was alluding to them. That he was saying, by looking at the skull, that you, the Roman Empire, caused tremendous sorrow, pain, and anguish to the Bnei Israel, to the Jewish people. And therefore, one day, your time will come as well, that you shall fall, and certainly, sure enough, it did. Now, as I was breaking my teeth trying to read this Mishnah, one could ask, why is this Mishnah written in Aramaic, when Perkei Avos is written in Hebrew, in Lashon HaKodesh? So some explain, based on the Haggadah, then the Haggadah we know, Halach Ma'anya, was also written in Aramaic. Maybe it's more familiar to us because we say it all the time. But nonetheless, it's in Aramaic. And they explain that Halach Ma'anya says, Kol Dich Ben Yetzav Yechol, which is really an invitation. You're inviting someone to come to your Seder. In those days, people understood the language of Aramaic more. So if you would invite me to your house for a meal, and you would invite me in a language that I don't understand, you speak to me in Chinese, I'm not going to know what you're talking about. And I'm probably not going to come to your house because I'm not going to understand of the invitation. Therefore, some explain that Hillel also was trying to show the tremendous value and importance of these words. That people should know that there's a dayan and that there's din. That there's a day of judgment and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be that dayan, will be that judge. And therefore, he didn't want the people who were less knowledgeable, those who were not fluent in Lashon HaKodesh, but rather only in Aramaic, that they should miss the boat and not be aware of this very important Torah philosophy. And therefore, he specifically used Aramaic and not Lashon HaKodesh. If we look over here, in the words of the Bartanura, he says, Rasha Hayisa, that you, owner of this skull, you are wicked. Melastim es abrios, you are a crook, you are a bandit. Matsifin benahar, uvosamidam madul. Since you caused people to die, you drowned them, you stole from them, and threw them into the water, that's exactly what happened to you. Continues the Bartanur and says, and those people that drowned you also will drown. And you could say, why? This guy deserved to be killed. He was a nobody. He was a Rasha. That's what he says. Says the Bartanura, Shlohai hadavar masr b'yad l'harkha. It's not given over to our hands to kill. We're not allowed to be a bunch of vigilantes. There's a Beis Din, there's a Jewish court, and they are the ones that are supposed to determine whether a person should be sentenced to death. In fact, the Gemara on Daf Zayin and Makos says that the Beis Din was very, very particular, and they would very rarely, even maybe only once in 70 years, sentence someone to death. So to put and to take the laws into my own hands as a vigilante, as an individual, that's something which we do not do. We do not allow. And therefore, even though this person deserved to be killed, you're not the one that's supposed to do it. We're very, very particular, very makbid, that when it comes to the taking of a human life, that the only time that we can do it is if Hashem gives specific instructions. But otherwise, we cannot. The specific instructions that the Beis Din is the one that goes through and finally reaches the Gemara Din, a verdict, and not a human being. Only through the words of Hashem that allows them to do it. Which explains, according to the opinion of the Devar HaSadeh, a very interesting contrast in the Akedas Yitzchak. The Torah tells us that when Abraham was confronted with the last trial of the Akedah, the Pasuk says that Hashem called him and said, Kach es bincha es yechidcha asher ahavta es Yitzchak. Take your son, take Yitzchak, and bring him v'aleihu shem l'ol. I want you to kill him. That's the simple understanding of what Abraham heard, was that he should kill his son Yitzchak. And who told him? Hashem. And he did exactly that. The Pasuk says later on that he took his knife, but an angel came and said, no, Don't do anything. Don't touch this child. Don't kill him. As the Devar said, there is an inconsistency. If it was so important that Hashem had to tell him to kill him, he began in the Nisayon. Why didn't Hashem also tell him not to kill him? And if it wasn't so important that a Malach told Abraham not to kill his son, so why couldn't Hashem just send a messenger, an angel, to tell him to kill his son initially? It explains the Varasada beautifully that when it comes to taking away a human life, the only way a person could possibly do it is with direct instructions from Hashem, similar to the Beis Din. However, when a person is told that it's not allowed, do not take this human life, even a malach, even an angel can tell you not to do so. That's sufficient for you to stop. So important and so valuable to human life. Continuing in the Bartanur, he says as follows. Elul a Beis Din, only the Beis Din is allowed to do this. V'kodesh Baruch Hu misarcha biyadan shemigalgan choyva yidei chayev bi'osid hu achar kach utvoy mehem misasecha. Eventually, you will be punished as well for committing this crime. And one could ask, as the Tosas Yom Tov does, it doesn't make sense. If it's true, as we've said, that everything that happens in this world is for a purpose, then there's a very difficult philosophical question that we have to ask. And that is, that if a person gets punished, gets hurt, gets killed, gets murdered, that person must have deserved, I shouldn't say the word deserved, that person's day on earth has reached its end. Which apparently would mean that if I would murder them, I'm just acting as an agent for God. Because this person was supposed to die anyway. So why should I be punished for doing something which would have happened regardless of my actions? So again, the only way we can possibly say that a person who was murdered and he died was because Hashem determined that that's true, that this person, this was his last day on earth. And he would have died anyway. So if he would have died anyway, so why would I get punished for murdering someone when the reality is the person was supposed to die anyway? So Tosfos Yom Tov says as follows. Shehari bebechiras atzmo asazos. You did this with your own free will to take this person's life. Lo lakayim shlichus yisbarach. Don't act like some righteous person. You didn't do it in order to follow Hashem's will. The harbi shluchim hayu lemakom shiharig zeh. And there are many different shluchim, many different agents that Hashem could have sent forth to have this person pass away. And therefore, you have no right to be the one to be this so-called agent to take away this man's life. And Medrash Shmuel says a little bit more upon this and says as follows. He writes, "Uvezeh yesh tshuva lishoil." Ask the Medrash Shmuel what we're asking. A very difficult philosophical question. If the person that died, it obviously reached his day of, that he was going to die anyway. Because if he wasn't supposed to die, I wouldn't have been successful in having killed him. So too, a crook can say the same thing. Misha nignav mimono, someone stole all my money. So what could he say? He's going to lose his money anyway. Wouldn't have been successful stealing from him. So the fact that someone stole $1,000 from me when I was driving to a casino, the guy could say, what's the difference? It was in the cards, so to speak, for him to lose that $1,000 in a few minutes anyway at the casino. So I'm not really doing anything wrong. I'm just doing the agency of God because he was going to lose this money anyway. So why should I be punished for something that would have happened even if I wouldn't have done it? So the Medrash Shmuel says, true, that may be the case on a very simplistic level, but you can still answer that Misa Saneherag Vehefsin Mamon Hoyim Es Hashem. Hashem is the one that determines how that will come about. But you murdering and stealing from him That came from your hands. Because who says that he was supposed to die by being murdered? Maybe he could have had, God forbid, a heart attack or a stroke. And who says necessarily the way I was going to lose my money was going to be stealing it? Maybe I could have lost it. Maybe I could have somehow spent it and wasted it somewhere else. Not through a form of a crime connected to me. Vimlo haya zeh harig wazeh. Ogona mamono haya meis binyan acher. Omasa mamono. L'chein nenesh zeh harashad kanoshom. It says in the Shmuel, the reason why you're punished is even though it's true, the person would have died anyway. The person would have lost the money anyway. But you attached yourself to that destruction. And since without you, something different would have happened. He would have died, but he wouldn't have died necessarily through being murdered. He would have lost the money, but it wouldn't have been necessarily been connected to having being stolen. And therefore, because of this, you who did a crime, who did an avera, you're going to be punished for having committed such a crime. And this concept of the Tosas Yom Tov, as well as Midrash Shmuel, as difficult as it is to really understand, because certainly we cannot just look at this and say, oh, a person deserved to die. We're not saying a person deserved to die. We're saying that Hashem has a master plan. And we certainly don't understand the reasons why things happen. But nonetheless, we believe that that Hashem gives a certain decree for reasons beyond our understanding, and you still have no right to act in a different way, to commit a crime. If the person was going to die, don't connect yourself to that person's death. And this is actually related to a mitzvah in the Torah. The mitzvah of makeh. Now when a person has a house, they build a nice building. The question is it necessary if you have a roof up top? Do you have to do anything to protect the people who are on the roof so that they shouldn't fall down? And the answer is yes. The pasuk says in Parshas Kisetze, Kisivne b'ischadosh, V'yasisa makal garecha, and you have a nice new house, you have to build a fence around your roof. V'losasim dama v'secha, don't let people fall off your house and die. Asks Rashi the same question in the Midrash Shmuel, the same as Tosfos Yom Tov, the guy who's going to die anyway. So why do I need to build a makeh around my house? If the guy is sweeping the gutters of all the leaves in the neighborhood, so he was going to die today anyway. Because if he wasn't going to die today, then Hashem wouldn't have allowed this to have happened. So why do I need to build a makeh? What's the purpose of it? If he's going to die, he's going to die anyway today. He's going to die crossing the street. He's going to get hit by a car. And if he's going to live, so it doesn't make a difference if I don't have a fence. And he's standing 2 inches away from falling off a 50-foot roof. He's not going to fall off. So what's the purpose of the makeh? The fence doesn't really do anything. It doesn't change anything. And Rashi says beautifully like this. This is Rashi in Chumash. He says, Roy Zelipol. This person was going to fall down anyway. Remember, he's doing the roofs of everyone's house today. The Apple Pekin, nonetheless, Lotis Galgal Misaso Al Yadcha. Don't let him fall down off of your roof. Don't let him fall down and die on your property. Shemigalgan Zechus Al Yadcha Zakai Vechov Al Yadcha. That what the Torah is telling us is you need to build a makeh, a fence. That even though that person will die today, but don't let him die on your watch. Let him die because Hashem made a decree that he's going to die. But don't connect yourself and your property and your negligence to someone else's loss. And therefore, the same idea here, that even though this person may have reached his last day breathing on this earth, you have no right to take away that person's life on earth. It's brought down in the Rambam. The Rambam says, quoting Gemara in Sota, V'amru Chachamim, B'mida she'adam moded b'modedin lo. The way that you toward others, the way you do things, that's exactly the same way you will be judged. This is not just a once in a while thing. This happens all the time, every moment, every day. The soul, ultimately, you'll get judged. Rashi says over here, Osam Shehet Fit. Those people that drowned you, they will die in the same way. Because by them committing a crime and taking the law in their own hands, they're chayav misa. And then he quotes the words of Shmuel Aleph, which we were learning not too long ago. The Chenu Omer, as David said to Shaul in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chav Dalet, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Mirishoyim Yetzi Resha. From the wicked comes forth wickedness. And this is specifically David HaMelech, or actually at the time he only had the name David. And he was being chased by the king, the first king of Israel, Shaul, with an army. And there David was in an area called En Gedi, which we're familiar with now, where there are many caves. And Shaul, not realizing that David was in that cave because there was some spider webs, which there's no way a person could have been in that cave, but somehow that's why Hashem created the spider. But nonetheless, Shaul was in there, in the cave, and David walked up to him and rended or cut part of his garment. And then afterwards, David turned to Shaul after they spoke and he walked away. And he said, you know, you're trying to kill me, but look at your garment. I could have killed you. I didn't kill you. And then they became friendly, then parting ways, and then, of course, because of the melancholy, he ended up once again trying to chase after David. Now, the psukim over there say that when David was speaking to Shaul, David told him as follows, and listen, I understand that I could have killed you. Look at the garment. I ripped the garment. I could have easily taken my blade and stuck you right into your stomach. Instead, I decided not to. Why? Mirshoyim Yetzi Resha. And it's based on the same concept of what we're saying. David was telling, listen, if it's the case that you deserved to die today, you'd have died anyway. Without me stabbing you to death. And if somehow Hashem decided that you weren't supposed to die today, I could have taken my knife and stabbed you numerous times, and you wouldn't have died. But rather, Mirshoyim Yetzi Resha, if Hashem wants you to die today, let Hashem take away your life. Because if I take away your life, now I am Chayiv Misa. Now I have committed a crime. And now, just as Hillel said, even though someone deserved to die, this person who was a murderer, who drowned others, you have no right to drown him. And therefore, so too I, David, am not going to lay a finger upon you, Shaul. Rather, I only cut your garments to show that I will not kill you. Let it be in Hashem's hands. This is actually an idea that's brought down as well in the Gemara in Makos, that a person who was chopping wood, and there were witnesses, and the blade flies off and kills someone, bishogig, inadvertently, or manslaughter, he goes to the Arimiko, to the cities of refuge. Now, what happens in the event that there are no witnesses? And let's say there were no witnesses of a person who killed Bemezid, who killed on purpose. So Hashem has a master plan. And he says, let one person be on top of a ladder and the other one walking down. And the person on the top of the ladder will fall down on the person, and that person will die. So the person who fell on the other guy killed him b'shogeg. He slipped. He went down, derech yirida. And now there are witnesses, he goes into the cities of refuge. And the person who died in this tragic event, he really deserved to die because of the murder that he had committed. The soul, at the very end, Hashem has a master plan. Sometimes we don't know. Sometimes it's hard for us to see it. And sometimes the only time we can see something is after the fact. We know this constantly. We see this as they have the expression by during football season, they have what are called Monday morning quarterbacks, that they second-guess the people at the time, and they say, oh, if I was there, I would have done X, I would have done this play, I would have done that, I would have called a timeout, I would have gone for a field goal. The truth is, it's easy to look back and say, this is how it was. But the reality is, when you're in it, it's much harder to see. It's much harder to be able to realize. Some people explain that this was the message that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Kisisa. That Hashem said, "V'hasirosi es kapi, v'ra'isa es acharai ufonai lo yira'u." The pasuk says that Hashem told him that I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face may not be seen. And some explain, as I've said before in this beautiful mashal, of an individual who has a lot of cloth. And a person wouldn't go simply to a store and pick up a suit, a men's warehouse or whatever, some store to pick up a suit. But rather, they give the materials, the wool, the buttons, the strings, the zippers, and he gives it to him. And you look at it, and he says, you know, a month later, I'll be done. A month later comes, finished. Beautiful suit, he tries it on, gives him, pays him money. He says, oh, by the way, where are the leftover materials? Where's everything now? He said, I'm sorry, I used up every single thing. Everything that I have is in this garment. I used all the zippers, I used all the wool. He said, that's impossible, I gave you so much, there must be so much extra. He said, you know what? The only way you would be able to see what I'm saying is true is if I would remove and unwind all of the material, all of the cloth, all the way to the very beginning. And then you would see all the material that you had given me a month before, and in fact, I did not take a single thing for myself. So too, Hashem is telling Moshe that you cannot see what is in front of you. It's only b'ra'isas acharoi. You can only see the back after the fact. Because sometimes in life, as we've seen already in the Mefarshim, that a Russia will die a peaceful death. And we could look at it and say, that's not fair. Why would Hashem do good for the Russia? And why would we see a tzaddik for Ralo, that things are not going so well for the tzaddik? And the answer is that we have limited vision. And what we see in front of us is not necessarily all the facts. B'ra'isas acharoi. But ultimately, one day, we will be able to see and look back and be able to realize that life really was fair. Everything really did have meaning. Everything really did have purpose.